Welcome to the Stripe Show. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. I'm excited to share with you this special episode of the Stripe Show podcast with Paul Tesori, just back from his time in Australia at the President's Cup. We'll get to that here momentarily. But first, I want to start with this with Paul Tesori, and that's the work that he does with his wife, Michelle, for the Tesori Family Foundation. Founded back in 2009, they've been helping kids with special needs all over the country. I've seen it firsthand, the All-Star Kids Clinic every Wednesday during the Players Championship Week. Please go check out their website, the TesoriFamilyFoundation.org. Paul has been helping his lending hand to many top PGA Tour players over the years. He's caddied for Vijay Singh, Sean O'Hare, Jerry Kelly, and now most recently, Webb Simpson. 20 wins in all Paul has been on the bag for, including the 2012 U.S. Open and 2018 Players Championship with his man, Webb Simpson. 3 Ryder Cups and 8 President's Cups in all, including this most recent one, a win for the United States under Captain Tiger Woods, 15-13. I got to catch up with Paul on all of the excitement and activities down in Australia, including what it was like to be a part of a team captained by Tiger Woods, but also inside of the ropes with the controversy that is Patrick Reed. Please enjoy this special edition of the Stripe Show podcast with Paul Tesori. And let's welcome in now Paul Tesori, the man himself, straight from Australia, down under. You've got to be a little bit tired, my friend.
Travis, thanks for having me on. Yes, not only am I a little bit tired, I did what they call is the worst possible thing you can do. And I came back and I took a nap for about 2 hours right in the middle of the day, which they say, whatever you do, don't do that. And of course, I fell victim to the exactly don't do and took a nap. So I'm feeling rested right now, ready to go, ready to see my son and daughter this afternoon. So
yeah.
Excited to talk to you for a little bit, and what a week we just had. What an incredible event.
It was an incredible event. I gotta tell you, I was glued to the TV, Paul. I mean, I loved every moment of the President's Cup. It was absolutely captivating. So many storylines, and we're gonna get to a lot of the storylines. Of course, you were a front row seat inside the ropes, caddying for Webb Simpson, who's just continuing to play terrific golf. And I would ask you as a starting point here, how the flight home was with the team, but I know that you guys had to fly separate, but you were on the flight with the team to Australia. And as I understand, there was a little bit of a party going on there on the way over, but then things dried up a little bit once on site. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Yeah. So we left the Bahamas on Saturday evening. We left around 8 o'clock and headed over. We had to make a stop in Acapulco to refuel. And so from the Bahamas to Acapulco, there was full, you know, you could drink, you could have wine, you could have beers, you can have whatever your desire was. They had a nice big bar set up with some lovely hors d'oeuvres. But once we left Acapulco for the big flight over to Melbourne, the drinking was done. Tiger wanted to institute a dry week. He wanted to really make sure that the guys were serious, that they were hungry, and that they were ready to go. And I think more so than anything, this is my 11th team event, and it's the first time I've ever had been a part of a dry week. And he said the caddies did not have to partake, but we did. We thought it would be weird to have drinks around them if they weren't. Mm-hmm. I think his biggest thing is he knew how hard this was going to be. He knew, you know, the youth of the Australia of the international team was going to be at a forefront, and that we had quite a few players that were coming off either injury or long periods of not playing well or just a lot of time off with, you know, with Ricky and Tony and Dustin, who didn't even play the Bahamas. And then, you know, Weber had only played twice, even though he had played at a high level when he did. Tiger had only played once since the Tour Championship. So I think he kind of knew that there were going to be some long days and some long preparation going into it. So the guys definitely got their fill in on the first part of the flight. And then it was extremely quiet once we took off from Mexico, headed to Melbourne.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine it was a long week. And I don't know how Tiger does. I mean, he hosted the Hero World Challenge the week before. And then he turns around and he's not only the captain, but he's playing in the President's Cup. And he has to be absolutely drained. Then, of course, a 15-13 win for the United States. Tiger Woods, of course. And I got to ask you, and you mentioned you've been a part of now 8 competitions in a team in team format, which is outstanding. And you've seen Tiger, I'm sure, in many of those as a player, but now as a captain. I'm curious, when you watch that firsthand with Tiger as a captain, it looked like to me he was as serious and as intense as a captain as he normally is as a player.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that surprised me the most. I just thought, you know, knowing he was going to be a playing captain and just knowing how much he has going on in his day-to-day life anyway, I really thought it might be a situation where he took a back seat and maybe allowed Freddie to do a lot of the kind of dotting of the I's and the T's, and or Strick or Zach, you know, to do some of that stuff. But he really didn't. And he was a full part of everything that was going on. For the last few weeks leading up to the event, caddies were receiving texts like me. Players were receiving texts. There were phone calls. There was just trying to match everything up together as well as possible. And, you know, it was one of the, I'm trying to go through again, 3 Ryder Cup teams, 8 President's Cup teams, 5 for the good side. So 8 on the U.S. side, 3 on the international side for Veej. But as far as my U.S. teams, it's the first captain I've had that actually came over and spent a lot of time with the caddies. Freddie was really, really good about this too, but Tiger even took it to the next level, where at dinner one night he sat during the entire dinner at our caddy table. And obviously we're having fun, we're telling stories, but he's also asking us questions, because I think you can probably get a little better idea of how a player is playing by sitting down with their caddy.
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, tell me what's going on out there right now. Yeah. This is what, you know, this is what Webb said. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you see anything else? What about this team? Are they bonding? Are they not bonding? And just kind of ask those questions. And a lot of times you'll get a more, I think, realistic answer. You know, as a player, as an athlete, you want to play. I don't think there's any backup quarterbacks in the National Football League that would say, if you have your chance, do you want to play? Yes, I want to play. You don't want the guy in front of you to get hurt, but you want to play. And it's the same thing in these team events. So I think Tiger did a great job of making sure all of those things were taken care of. And he was present the entire week. He really didn't practice that much. Now, he took part in our practice sessions when we had our groups out there, but he really wasn't able to put in the amount of time he normally would put in as far as work goes. He took good care of his body, got therapy every day, and worked out, but he really wasn't able to practice as much as normal. And to turn in the performance he did as a player, to go 3-0, if he goes 2-1, we tie the President's Cup. And if he goes 1-1-1, which would have been fine with everything else he had going, we would have lost. Yeah. So,
well, it felt like when he put himself out there with Abraham Answer, who was clearly the best player for the international squad, that, you know, he got about halfway through that match, maybe on 12-13. It just felt like, okay, if Tiger wins this match, then the President's Cup is going to the United States. It just, for some weird and odd reason, that's the way it felt. That's the way it was playing out. And of course, you know, many other guys won, including your man, Webb Simpson, on the final day. But the internationals played well. Meaningful golf in the middle of December with the best players in the world. Sign me up. And they delivered. And, you know, Tiger put himself out there sitting himself on Saturday, which was, I think, a surprise to all. But it worked out. The guys responded and came back motivated on Sunday with confidence and put it away. So, speaking of Tiger, so I saw this picture and it was Tiger with his hat on backwards and it said Paul Hu. Now this story, it was a great picture. When I saw it, I knew exactly what it was. But this story between you and Tiger Woods goes way back 20 years ago. Share it with our audience.
I definitely will. All right. So I'm going to paint a little bit of the picture while we go through it. So I started working as a caddy in 2000 for Vijay Singh. Me and Vijay had become friends when I played on tour. We had stayed in touch, and he had asked me to come out that summer, and I'd helped him out a little bit with his golf swing. And then he asked me to come out as his caddy for 1 week, hired me in a week, blah, blah, blah. So my third tournament caddying in my career was the President's Cup in Virginia in 2000. And obviously I was on the international team caddying for VJ. So the first match goes out and we're paired against Tiger and Noda. Second match comes out, we're paired against Tiger and Noda. Third match, Tiger and Noda. Fourth match, Tiger and Noda. And who do you think we get in singles? We get Tiger. So it was a situation where that year Tiger had won three majors. VJ had won the other one, being the Masters. And the U.S. only needed a point and a half to retain the cup. It was a complete blowout. They had the Americans had played incredible golf all week. We had struggled. VJ and I, we were 1-3 that week with only one win in the four matches. And people don't know this as we watch Noda on TV now, but Noda was an incredible player. He had won four times in a 13-month period.
Yeah.
And was one of the best players in the world there at that time. And Tiger did not play well in any of the team sessions. Noda was truly carrying him the entire way around. So we show up on Sunday. And the ball guys, which to explain that to the viewers, are the guys as we're walking to the range, they have all of our golf balls, whether it's Titleist, whether it's Bridgestone, whether it's whatever, Precept, TaylorMade, they're all lined up and you get your balls. Well, when we showed up there on Sunday, the ball guys had 12 hats made and stitched really nicely for the international team that said Tiger Who on the back. Now, the ball guys were all Americans, but Tiger hadn't signed their flag yet. He later told me he was going to. He was actually going to give him a different one, but he had not signed their flag yet. So 23 to 24 guys had. So they thought it'd be funny to have these hats made up. I saw it. I thought it was hilarious. I go to the range, showed VJ. VJ laughed. He goes, yeah, put it on. So we go out to the course and everything's fine. Normal match. VJ's one up through three. And we get to the fourth hole. Tiger, it's a par three. Tiger hits it in the water, chips it to about 15 feet. And VJ's only got 5 feet for birdie. So VJ says, Tiger, pick it up. That's good. Thinking he's going to say, yeah, VJ's is good too. But Tiger doesn't say anything from 10 feet. I'm like, well, he knows, you know, VJ's not the best of putters. Sometimes he's going to make him putt it. So VJ puts it down to, I'm going to say a millimeter. It was hanging. Half the ball's over the front edge, half the ball's out. So we obviously assume it's good, but we haven't heard anything. And we turn around and look, and Tiger's standing on the side of the green with his arms crossed and a scowl on his face. And I remember VJ looking at me and goes, well, bud, I think he saw your hat and doesn't think it's as funny as we do. So VJ taps in to go two up through four. We get to the next tee box, and I'll never forget the swing, but Tiger turned probably an extra 15 degrees on his backswing and about a 305-yard, which back then was long,
oh, yeah,
in 2000, about a 305-yard, one-yard draw came out, and Tiger played the next 13 holes 7-under and beat us 2-1. Needless to say, he showed us who Tiger was.
Yeah.
When I got done with that round, it must have been 20 different news agencies there. And I realized very quickly, whoops, I made a mistake. even though in my heart it was meant to be a joke.
It was innocent.
It was innocent, but it didn't come off that way. So the last little part of the story, and this is Webb's favorite story, and again, Tiger likes this one too, but we never really talked about it. I had gone up to him a couple weeks later and just said, hey, bud, it feels like there's some weird tension out here. I didn't mean any disrespect. It was meant as a joke, blah, blah, blah. And he said, thank you for saying that it just made him want to kick our, you know what? But he didn't take it disrespectfully. So long story short, 2012, I'm working for Weber. I'm sorry. It had been 2011. I was working for Weber out at Tiger's tournament at Sherwood. And Tiger was on the putting green. I just turned to Weber and I was like, Weber, you know, things are still weird between him and I. We've played practice rounds together. We've done all that. We've never talked about the hat. So I'm just going to throw something out here. Watch this. So Tiger, about 5 seconds later, comes walking in front of me. I said, what's up, Tiger Who? He said, what's up, 2-1? And he just kept walking. And like, he did not miss a quarter of a second. Before he took probably 10 steps and he looked back at me with that big old grin that he gets going and smiled at me. But like, he didn't forget. It had been 10 and a half years since the event. We hadn't talked about it. I throw it out there and he said, what's up, 2-1 right away. So here we go 19 years later and we're sitting over in Australia, almost 20 years later. And we're sitting in Australia and I have no idea this is coming. It's picture day. John Wood is a dear friend of mine. He's caddied. I think this was his 14th team event. And it was his idea for all the caddies to wear it and then to call Weber and Tiger and have those two wear it as well. And so unbeknownst to me, I'm just sitting around having a good day. We're about to go take pictures. And I see somebody's hat. And then I see the next hat. I'm like, what are y'all doing? And then, of course, I see Captain Woods. So, you know, for me, it is one of those things that, like, I'm always going to remember. I was getting hazed. I was getting harassed. And I loved it. I was the center of the practical joke. But it was always meant to be something fun. Even at the Ryder Cup last year, Jim Furyk had never heard the story. And as he asked me, you could tell he was still like angry about it. He goes, yeah, why'd you wear that stupid hat again? And Tiger was right there. Tiger like, no. Paul, tell the story. He loves it when I tell the story. So,
oh, does he?
Oh yeah. Loves it. So I read, he loves the part with the arms crossed and the scowl on his face. That's his favorite part of the story. I don't think he minds. He even admits that he played terrible the first five matches, but he does like that 7-under on the last 13.
Oh, yeah.
2-1. He likes that part of the story too. So
it's amazing. I haven't heard the story articulated like that firsthand. And there's a lot more depth to it than I was thinking. And then that's just Tiger, right? Like the intimidation of standing there with his arms crossed. Right. And you're like walking over and like, Oh no.
Even
VJ.
And I think we saw it at the President's Cup too, you know, Abraham Answer, who is a tremendous player, and he's part of this young generation, which we can get into later again, that we're seeing that, mm-hmm. you know, at 22 years old, they're not afraid. Nobody's afraid anymore. It used to be when we were younger and you first came out, you would never have wanted that spotlight. And Answer mm-hmm. asked for that spotlight. And I really do think that led to Tiger playing even better in the singles and having more of that. I just went back through and watched the coverage of Sunday singles just because I love golf. And you could see he had that look in his eye whole day.
Oh, yeah.
There's no messing around. I'm not Captain Woods right now. I'm not even teammate Woods right now. My team needs me to go get a point. I'm going to go do that. Abraham played great, but Tiger just has that ability at times to kind of put on a different face, so to say, and to put his head down and to get it done. And I mean, I think right now he's starting to play the best golf he's played in 10 years. Watching that coverage, his short game looks incredible. And that's his iron play and his short game is what made him the player that he was. You know, people say he was a bad driver of the ball, and that's a ridiculous comment. He was never a bad driver of the ball. It was just by far his weakness.
Yeah.
You know, and
no, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I think like he looked, you know, I mean, no one knows Augusta Greens better than Tiger. And those appeared, from my perspective, like they had that kind of, you know, feel to it, you know, kind of an Augusta type of green.
For sure.
And he looked at home. I mean, it didn't matter how fast the greens were. I mean, he just looked at peace on the greens. And I got to tell you, Paul, I texted one of my friends, you know, after a couple of his drives, I just said, look, if Tiger is going to step up with his driver and rip it down the middle and be that confident with it, I mean, look out. I mean, because he is the best iron player in the world. His short game is getting back to form where it used to be. And his putting just looks, you know, like his putting's going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're right. You know, hitting driver off the first tee. And for those that haven't been there, it was downwind. If you pull it 12 yards, it's unplayable.
Okay.
And, you know, if you block it 15, you're okay, but you cannot make birdie. So you only have about a 27-yard gap to hit that golf ball off the tee. If you don't hit it there, you're either taking an unplayable or you're not making birdie. And to step up there in singles and to rip driver down the middle, again, just shows how confident that he is.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my thought when he stepped up on the first hole. Because he's, you know, I mean, look, Tiger obviously shows some nerves on the first hole historically. I mean, he is not a good driver of the ball in the first hole.
Right.
And he's, you know, that's usually his downfall. But you know, I mean, gosh, he stepped up there on one and just ripped driver. And I was like, okay. I mean, that kind of got my attention a little
bit. Well, I think it got all of our attention. Like as a team, you see that too. We're all watching that monitor. Some guys are already hitting balls. Some guys are already putting, but there's two big jumbotrons on the range and by the putting green. Mm-hmm. And a couple of us were still inside when he hit it. And, you know, when he hit that drive, I think all of us felt the same way. Like, okay, here we go. Like he's ready to go. And then on two, he hit it about 350 down the right hand side, hit 6-iron in. And to tell you how good that is, we hit a 5-wood in about an hour and 15 minutes later, just to show you how far he drove that ball. So
how hard, how firm was number one green?
Yeah, like I don't know how to explain it. I'm going to do my best because, first of all, Royal Melbourne is the way I believe golf should be played.
Okay. Now, on the ground, now, running.
Yep. On the ground, running. But I don't believe it has to be necessarily as hard as Royal Melbourne. The greens are just, they are really difficult. They're extremely undulating. On the side of the greens, it's like an old Donald Ross golf course that you have the greens running 12. That would be like the only comparison I could give you. Yeah. But because for members now at world-class levels, yes, give us a Royal Melbourne. But I think, you know, for your regular players, it would be a little bit too difficult. But what I mean is the golf course that we played on Sunday was 6,860 yards.
Yeah,
that is unheard of. At Erin Hills, where Koepka shot 16 under, it was 78-70 one day. So this course was 1,000 yards shorter. And I went through all the scores, and the lowest score of the day was 5 under par.
Really?
Yes. And it didn't blow that hard. It was just like a normal 10 to 15 there, which is kind of a regular day in Australia. And I just think we need more golf courses like that. A lot of dog legs. Every hole, if you want to, if you've got big enough kahunas and you are a good enough driver of the ball, you can hit driver on every hole. But that's probably not the right way to play golf course. So I think by that saying, I love golf courses where there's not a lot of force carries. That it really makes really tactical in how you want to play the game. TPC Sawgrass would be another one for me that I just love it. You know, you have to bend the ball both ways. You can hit driver on every hole, but if you do, you're going to have to take on some risk at the same time. So, you know, to watch how firm and fast the golf course played, to be able to be around that course, knowing that if you hit good shots, you're going to get rewarded. If you don't, it won't. So number one was your question about how firm the green is. I'm going somewhere. The third round, which was Saturday morning, it was early in the morning, still a little bit of dew on the ground. And the pin on the first hole was 20 on and 6 from the right. Webb hit a full sand wedge that landed 2 yards on and went over the back of the green.
Wow.
And so that means the ball released 36 yards and went over the green. And one thing we figured out later on, Patrick ended up doing the same thing. Patrick Reed landed it 4 yards on and went over the green. What we learned earlier on is that, like, you have to play that golf course enough to where, you know, downwind, you can't lay back. You can't, you've got to knock it up there where you either can hit some kind of bump and run or some type of slice spinner to be able to help the contour of the green kind of work it. And that's what you saw on Sunday in singles.
Interesting.
Everyone was getting it up there around that between 40 and 70 yard where you could really kind of slice the legs out from under it and put some spin on it and be able to hold the green. Wow. So just a brilliant golf course.
Well, it was fun to watch. I mean, what a golf course. And I just, there was so many shots on one with a wedge coming in that would hit and literally look like, you know, it just hit cement. And I just sat there and thought to myself, man, this golf course is outstanding. And to your point, 6,860 yards, you know, with the dog legs. And I'm sure the internationals would have, if they would have had full control, they probably would have put a little bit more rough on the sides if they could, you know, to penalize some of the downfalls of the driving of the American teams, the Bombers. But it was, you know, they set it up to be fair to both sides. And that's probably, you know, one of the perfect golf courses to do it. And I want to come back to the President's Cup here in a little bit, because I know Webb played with Patrick Reed for a couple days there, but I want to talk about Webb for a second. You know, I'm hearing you talk about his game coming into some of these greens and hitting a 5-wood into number 2 versus Tiger 6-iron. You know, Webb Simpson to me is one of the most impressive players in the game today. He's the 11th ranked player in the world, first and foremost. But he's playing, Paul, in the power era. I mean, we're in the power era, right?
Yes, we are.
This is on the PGA Tour. It's grab the driver, create speed, and hit it as far as you can. And as long as it's not in the water and out of bounds and somewhat in front of you, let's find it and play it from there. You know, he's 288 yards off the tee last year, which is 145th on the PGA Tour. Strokes gain off the tee, he's 114th. I don't think anybody in the top 10 is losing strokes, or anybody in the top 11 is losing strokes off the tee. So Webb makes it up. I mean, listen to these stats from last year. Strokes gain approach, 14th. Strokes gain around the green, 20th. Strokes gain putting, 11th. I mean, that's just incredible numbers into the greens, around the greens, and on the green. So I'm fascinating, and I want to ask you this about how you go about this with Webb in the power hitter, someone who's giving up so much distance off the tee, someone who's losing strokes off the tee, but yet is ranked 11th in the world. What what are the keys? Like when you guys get to a course, and we can come off of Royal Melbourne here for a second, but when you get to a course on the PGA Tour, let's call it, you know, what are the keys that you feel like you guys have to play to not only be competitive, because it's not the point of just being competitive. I mean,
correct.
Webb is winning and competing. What are the two or three keys that you could share with this, given the distance he's given up off the tee?
Yeah, I mean, what a tremendous question. I'm actually thankful that you asked, because it is, we do live in an era where, you know, golf course designers are building golf courses that are built for one thing, and that is how far can you hit it. We're seeing massive widths of fairways. We're seeing what I call the forced carries, which I'm not a big fan of at all, which means, you know, they put a bunker out that if you can fly it 290, the fairway widens. It's kind of like the opposite of the way Donald Ross kind of envisioned golf, which is where you pinch it in if guys want to be aggressive. So, you know, we've had to kind of redefine how we play the game. And I will go through a couple answers. The first answer is the simple one, the way we try to do things, but it can't always be done, is that we try to pick courses that we play that fit our games. So, you know, for instance, as far as the West Coast goes, you know, courses like the Sony Open, courses like Phoenix. If you come around to Florida, we have a lot of great ones for us. The Honda, Tampa, the Players are all old school. You got to bend the ball both ways. Hilton Head, another one. And so that's the first line of defense, is pick ones where there's not forced carries, where you have to work the ball left and right, where distance control is hugely important, and accuracy into the greens. So the second answer is you can't control that a lot of times. We play the World Golf Championship events. We play major championships where force carries are important. And so we've done a couple things. The first thing we did is we've changed our clubs. Webb doesn't have the advantage of being able to have four wedges in his bag, because we can't afford to give up what we have on the back end. Webb's that he gets made fun of all the time. He's got six head covers in his bag. One of them's a putter, obviously, but he's got a driver, a three wood, a five wood, a three hybrid, and a four hybrid. And Webb has to have those clubs in the bag, because he is going to have to hit way more four irons in the greens than pretty much anybody else that we're playing with. You know, there's examples when we played with John Rahm and Dustin Johnson at Liberty National last year, where there would be a five club difference on some of these holes, where you might have a dog leg and a bunker to carry, let's say at 295. Well, those guys could take it over the bunker and cut the hole in half and hit it down there. Well, Webb's got to hit a three wood off the tee down the left-hand side. And, you know, I remember the 18th hole at Liberty National, Dustin hit a nine iron in and we hit a three iron in. And we hit it about 15 feet, and Dustin hit it just outside of the 16 feet. And he asked the question, he goes, was that your gap wedge or sand wedge? And that's what he's named Webb's three hybrid and four hybrid. Is this gap wedge and sand wedge going into the green?
That's not fair.
because he's gotten so good at them, to be honest with you. And so the that's first thing is, yeah, I would say is equipment. You know, you got to put the equipment in your bag. Do we want four wedges? Absolutely we do, but we can't give it up on the back end. And then the last thing I'll say is kind of an attitude that we've had to really come into it as it's 72 holes. And we know if we play it the right way, even though we're going to shoot three under and somebody that day is going to shoot nine under. It's really easy to go chase that six, seven, eight under par, but we know we can't get it from where we're going to play. If we play our game in 72 holes, we're going to be right there. We're going to have a chance. And the way we do that, we call it, let me make sure I've got this right. We try to be non-aggressive. Help me out here. I'm having a brain freeze.
Conservative.
Thank you. So we're trying to be conservatively aggressive.
Yeah.
And even though it sounds like kind of opposite words, what I mean is we will take a hole where other guys are hitting irons off the tee and we'll driver. My best example, Royal Melbourne, number four. It's a dog leg right, 420 yards. Most guys are hitting a three iron off the tee and an eight iron in the green. Well, Weber's got a few different shots with the driver, something that we've had to create. So he tees the ball all the way down, almost like it's off the ground, and hits. It's like our two wood that we call it. And it's just kind of like a little baby cut with it. It only flies probably 260, but then runs another 25, and he can shape it left or right really easily. So a hole like that, he's hitting driver off the tee where other guys aren't. And so there's those small opportunities in the middle of rounds where other guys are laying back, that Webb can go ahead and hit his driver and kind of neutralize that distance. So conservatively aggressive is something that we try to do as often as possible, anytime that we can. If we know that, you know, because Webb is an accurate driver of the ball. He just doesn't drive it, you know, far enough. And the crazy thing about the game is he's gained 7 yards in the last 2 years, and he's fallen in distance off the tee. It just shows you how much the game has changed.
You know, it's funny. He reminds me of – he kind of reminds me of Fred Funk when he was that age, a little bit. Like,
yeah,
he – you know, I worked with Fred for many, many years, and I remember – one time when Fred was on the Champions Tour, he played in the Webb.com event, well, the Corn Ferry Tour now, but when it was at Sawgrass, they asked him to play as a honorary player, you know, as part of the local community.
Yeah.
So he played, and I went out there with him for a couple rounds, and we got paired up with Luke List. He hit a drive, and Luke didn't even hit driver most of the day, but on one hole he did hit driver, and Fred hit driver, and we were standing in the fairway, and Fred looked at me and he says, I think he just hit it 100 yards past me.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, Luke is really, really long,
and yes, he is.
He reached back and grabbed and hit one, and it was like, oh my gosh, it wasn't 100, but
yeah,
it was 70, 80.
We've had some good 70 or 80s, like with Cameron Champ in Phoenix this past year on the 18th hole. We hit driver off the tee and had one, I think we had 111 to the hole, and Cam hit driver off the tee and had 32 to the hole or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just amazing how far the guys are hitting the golf ball. For those of you that were watching the President's Cup, you see what Bryson DeChambeau has done.
Yeah.
You know, he's gone up 29 pounds already since the beginning of the year, and he wants to continue to go until he starts to lose flexibility, and then he'll stop. That's his goal. Mm. But on the range, he's hitting 130 every time. Anytime he wants 130 swing speed, he hits it every time. We went over and watched him. We watched him hit five in a row, all between 130 and I think 131.6 was his height. And I asked him, what was he at the beginning of the year? He said around 122. Now these are on swings, not those won't be on course swings. These are swings where you're fully letting it go. I asked him how often he'll do it, and he said he won't even average one around. That would be a specialty if he needed to. But Webb, because we were joking about it, got on there and gave it all he had and was 116.2. You know, so that'll show you 14 yards, and you're smarter about this than I am, but it was about 2.5 yards per swing speed. So that would be about 50 more yards in the air. And you start looking again at course design, which I wish we would go back a little more old school in that design, but you look at course design, that could be a massive advantage. And that's why Bryson is going through what he's going through right now, is realizing the way the game is going. And if you can start flying the ball, if you can get to that 320 number, the world is going to kind of be at your feet on a lot of these golf courses.
The Stripe Show podcast brought to you by Encore Golf. Best-in-class golf balls fueled by state-of-the-art innovation. They have the holiday deal of the year. Go to EncoreGolf.com/holiday promo to make someone's holiday and golf game a whole lot better.
All right, we're going to come back to the President's Cup here in a minute, but we're going to switch it up. Play a little game here we call the three-word game. And the way it works, Paul, is something's going to come out of my mouth, and you got three words to just react to it, however you want.
Okay, I'm just going to say University of Florida. There you go. Okay, I'm kidding. Okay. All right. There you go. All right, I'm done. So I'm done being funny. I'm ready.
Okay. I've got a handful of here. This is fun. So, all right. Okay. So the first one is caddy life.
Hard, but great.
You know what? Caddying is hard. I don't think people realize how hard you guys work. I think they know you work hard, but I don't really think they understand how hard you guys work.
Like, you know, Australia was a perfect example. We fly in, we're all jet lagged. We get in there Monday afternoon, all the caddies go out to the course and spend about 7 hours at the course before it gets dark, and then we go back to the hotel. And then the next day, we left at 5:30 on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I mean Tuesday, and we stayed till 8:00. To make sure we had coursework done on Wednesday. So our average day at the President's Cup, the first 6 days, was right around 13 hours. And the last day was a little bit less. But yeah, we do work hard, and we're paid very well, and we love what we do.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean, but it's hard, but great at the same time. Like I wouldn't trade it, but, and then being away from the family and the young kids can be really brutal during some of the stretches that we go through.
Stretches. I always told Fred, I said, look, I'm here to help you with your game. And we, you know, we've got our plan. I said, I'll do, you know, I'm here, I'm part of the team. I said, whatever, but I only have one thing that I will not do. And that's caddy.
So. Attaboy, look at you. That's a smart man. You are wise beyond your years, Travis.
And I caddied like two or three different times. And I wasn't very good at it. So I was like, look, I told you, I don't want to caddy. I'm not good at it.
I bet you would be good at it.
It's hard for me. All right, next one. Next one. Three-word game. Here it is. Ready? Here's the phrase. When you give a bad yardage to Webb.
Don't fire me.
When's the last time?
I've been fortunate enough. I've never given Webb one. I've been fortunate up there. I have a system that's tried to hold me from that. But I gave VJ a bad one in the U.S. Open 2005 in Pinehurst on the 18th hole on Friday. I gave him 115 to the or whatever. Doesn't matter. Front flag on 18 at Pinehurst. He hit this beautiful wedge in there, and it one hopped over the green to a front pin, needless to say. And so he gets up there, and thank goodness. You know, I was praying as he was over this chip, and I realized about 30 yards after, I got my book out, and I started to go through my numbers, like, yep, I did the old dreaded add and subtract. I subtracted 5 and added 10. Whatever I did, I was exactly 20 yards off, which is, I mean, it's horrendous. He chipped it. He almost chipped it, and it lipped out for birdie. And so now the problem is I know that I've done it wrong. What do I do with it? Do I swallow it? Do I let it go? Or do I admit my, you know, mistake? So VJ gets done with scoring. I'm like, I got to tell him. It's like, VJ, I got to talk to you. He goes, don't worry, bro. I know the number was wrong. I asked Sergio. He's like, I made up my mind. If you didn't tell me, I was going to fire you on the spot. But you told he goes, but you told me we're good. Just don't let it happen again. And that was the end of it. Never brought it up again. So, yeah. So that was
2005.
Good.
2005.
Yep.
Hey, no wonder you're out there in demand for so long.
Well, let's knock on wood for sure. I hope that doesn't open up any new boxes for sure.
All right. Next one. Three-word game. 2018 Players Championship.
Best win ever. You know, for me, those would be my three words, best win ever.
Yeah.
People don't understand it when I tell them that for me, the Players was a bigger win than the U.S. Open. There's a lot of different reasons why I had that answer. First of all, we led wire to wire. He was the center of attention the entire week. Whereas the U.S. Open going into Sunday, we had only given one interview the entire week. And, you know, at the end of it, you're standing there with a trophy. Number two, I was born and raised here. My grandfather taught me how to play the game at Jack's Beach. I walked on that 17th hole in 1981 before it was even grass. There was dirt. The hole was there, but it was dirt. Raymond Height, old superintendent from way back when, him and my grandfather were friends. And so I had a 5-iron and a 7-iron to try to get it on the green. It was back at old junior sets you used to have when I was 9, and the 7-iron kept going short and the 5-iron kept going over. I remember being there and that being my favorite tournament. The first time I ever walked on a PGA Tour event, again, was Sawgrass Country Club across the street. So this is home and it's my major. And for him to win and to come back from, you know, the run in with the Yips for 2.5 years on the putter and to come back from where we had been and to win again, to do it there and the way he did it running away, it'll be a memory I never forget.
Yeah, I mean, he was in incredible golf. And like you said, he went wire to wire. And, you know, sleeping on the lead like that.
It's hard.
I can't imagine. I mean, I would just say it's hard, but I don't know. I mean, I can imagine how difficult it is.
You know, it was incredible. We had a 7-shot lead going into Sunday.
Yeah.
And it never felt safe. And it's the one golf course. It would be the last course on the tour that I would want to hold on to that lead. Because you can go get it at TPC. If you want, it's a great thing about the golf course. If you're swinging well and you want to go try to chase a 7-8 or even 9 under and you put the driver in your hand and you have a great driving day, you can shoot those scores. But at the same time, you can shoot 3 over and at the end of the day be like, I don't know what happened. I played good. And so it's a tough course to hang on to. We had some monsters chasing us. Tiger, Jay Day, Dustin were all only four back at one point on the backside. So it was never comfortable until we got it in the fairway on 18. Then I was okay and could breathe a little bit.
Yeah, that was an awesome day. Of course, I saw you earlier in the week with your with all the your foundation and charity work that you do. And then you guys just, you know, roll on from Wednesday there and go wire to wire. It was an awesome week, and the Players is right around the corner here. You know, just what do we got here? 3.5 months away. It's
crazy to me.
It's flying by. All right, next one here. Three word game, family.
Family. Tiring, but amazing. I think any parent, I know, Travis, you can attest to this, but any parent. Parenting is hard. They strip you of your patience. They can strip you of your sleep. You are exhausted all the time. But as soon as I'm gone for 2 days, I yearn to be back in their presence for sure.
It's awesome.
It is tiring, tiring, but amazing would be my answer.
I don't think I need to add to that. That was
no. That was I think that covers said. It for all of us.
Three word game. Tiger Woods as the Player.
Best ever exclamation point.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. You know what's cool? Real quick, and I've got two more for you. What was really cool? You know, and the President's Cup, you know, hasn't been the Ryder Cup. I mean, you know, the Ryder Cup we know is just amped with the tradition, but this President's Cup just felt different. There's a lot of different reasons why. But Tiger being the captain and to see those guys just, I mean, I've always said, look, anytime you can get the best players in the world playing and you've got their peak attention and they're fully engaged, that's great. That's great. That's great television. And, you know, these guys went to Australia and they really, really wanted to get it done for Tiger. I mean, you could see the intensity for them to do it, not just for the country. If they want to do it for the country, of course, but for TW. I mean, that's the respect they have.
I, you know, there's no way we'll ever know, but I actually feel like if it would have been any other captain, I feel like we would have lost. And not because any other captain wouldn't have done a great job. You know, we were staring very solidly at a 9-1 deficit at the end of the Friday, the end of the second day. Every match was two down. We were already down 6-1 with three more on the golf course. And somehow, some way, we flipped those into two wins and a half with two monster putts on the 18th hole by Justin Thomas and Patrick Cantlay and another one by Tony Finau later on. And, you know, so much of that had to do, I think, with T-Dub being the captain.
Yeah, I agree.
He just, no one wanted to lose because we never want to see him lose. We want to make sure. That's it. I know. I mean, Tiger's done it to him his whole career.
It's crazy.
Yep. And Ernie did a great job. But again, we have the stronger team. The international team played incredible all week. I do think it's as the days progressed, I think we got a little bit more used to the time zone. We got a little bit more used to the golf course, and thank goodness we were able to overcome it at the end. But I think Tiger, just us playing for him instead of just, you don't want to say just playing for the country, but playing for the greatest of all time. It's a definite different mindset going into it.
So how about three word game, Tiger Woods, the captain?
Ooh, great. Impressive, engaged leadership. Those are big words, but like, he was a great leader. He impressed me in everything that he did. And he was just so fully engaged in every aspect of the team. You know, he was spending quality time with the caddies, sitting down at our table, having dinner with us, instead of sitting with the players, asking us questions, telling stories, diving in, knowing he might get a little bit more honest response from us than the players. Not that the players are trying to be dishonest, but every player wants to play. Every athlete wants to play. And I just think it was just extremely intelligent by him to do what he did. And he was engaged from a month out as the tech started rolling into all of us to all the way to the finish on Sunday night, to the fun bus ride back celebrating. It was evident that he really wanted this.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time before he rolls over to the Ryder Cup as the captain. And, but it's a great time for golf. You know, I you know, I found myself for the first time ever coming off the President's Cup. And I said, you know what? I can't wait for the President's Cup in two more years. You know, like, I don't think I've ever said that. And so it was just, it was awesome.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I wanted to say one thing too, that we're seeing right now that I don't think some people realize. It's Tiger's generation that we're seeing.
Yeah.
The Abraham answers, the kid M, Ben On, Joaquin Neiman, all these young kids that were on the international team. This is all Tiger's generation. They grew up watching him and thinking that the big moment was an expectation, thinking that the big moment was what I'm yearning for. And it's changed so much. You know, 20 years ago, if you were a bright-eyed rookie out there, you would have been terrified. Nobody's terrified anymore. The Americans aren't terrified. These young players, you watch them come out and they are just so hungry and so driven and not scared of the big moment at all. And you're seeing the same thing with the international team. And this competition, it's going to be, they'll probably split sides for the next 20 years. It's incredible how high the level of golf is. I was blown away. We played good our first two matches, us and P. Reed. And we got beat one down and got beat 2-1 playing good golf. Yeah. And that just shows you.
Yeah, no, that's a great segue back to, you know, back inside the ropes here of the President's Cup. And, you know, everyone knows all of the headlines coming into the week with Patrick Reed and what happened at the, you know, what happened at Tiger's event, the Hero World Challenge. And, you know, there's different opinions and perspectives on what happened and then, you know, how Patrick has handled it since then. But you knew going over to Australia, and being everyone in fresh in mind, that they were going to use that to try to rattle Patrick Reed. And no one had a better seat than you did with Webb Simpson paired with Patrick Reed for the first 2 days. Give us a feel for what was going down there inside the ropes and the Aussies treating Patrick Reed.
Yeah. You know, it was really, it was tough. It was difficult. I was a little surprised just because in 2011, the Australian fans were incredible. They cheered for their team. You know, they cheered less for us. You know, they didn't mind cheering if we made mistakes. I thought they were incredible. So I think I got a little bit spoiled last time around. This time was a little bit different. You know, Adam Scott had made a call to all the fans to, you know, not root for us and that they really wanted that 13th man on their team to go forward and to help the, you know, push them across the finish line. And obviously what happened with Patrick at the Bahamas on Friday just gave them more ammunition that they needed. And, you know, I think it went too far personally. We are a little bit shielded in golf. I'm a little bit of an old school believer that I think it's okay that we have different expectations in golf. I think it's okay that we're different from every other sport. We call penalties on ourselves. There's no other sport that will ever be created. I think that that is the case where we're actually seeking out people to go say, hey, my ball moved. I didn't make it move, but it's a penalty. Charge me. And so I wish it was a little bit different, but, the fans were fine until it was time to like hit the ball. And I think then just still some of the jarring was a little bit too much. It's a tough situation to be in. It was definitely a distraction. I wish I could say the American fans would have been better. And the truth is they wouldn't have been better. They would have been just as bad, if not worse. So I just think it's an expectation that I need to do a better job of at times, not going into thinking it's going to be daisies and roses instead of realizing we're on foreign turf and they're going to be a little bit brutal. I really like Patrick Reed, and I know that there are plenty of people out there that won't agree with me, but I've seen the guy's heart. I've seen what he has to offer. And he just has a tendency to make some pretty big mistakes, and it happens in the public eye, and then maybe he doesn't react, you know, the right way. I think if he could go back in time, and I know he shared this with me, and if he could just do the interview over after the Hero Challenge, I think he would have said, hey guys, that looked terrible. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to cheat. I wasn't trying to do anything. It looked bad. I accept my penalty. I'm sorry. And just go forward from there instead of trying to make excuses. But I'm sure he was shocked when he got in. He thought he was going to come in with the lead, and then he's told he's two back. And, you know, he paid a high price. It cost him about $500,000, and it cost him a win at the Hero. So he paid a high price for it. And unfortunately, it's going to stick with him for a while. I don't think this is going to go away. And that's the way golf is. So I wish it would. But, you know, in this game, integrity is really high. Yeah. And while I am sure in my heart he had no intentions to purposefully, you know, remove the sand, it's just one of those things. It's going to stay with him.
So for you, you felt like it was kind of a, you know, it was a mistake that he was unaware of. And then when he got in, that was, you know, he finds out that he's got a 2-shot penalty. But your feeling is that he was innocent, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think now, obviously, he committed the foul. It's definitely a 2-shot penalty. There's no argument there. I don't think he intentionally tried to cheat. He knew that there was a camera back there. He knew that he was in the last group. He knew that he was leading the golf tournament. He knew. So I don't think anybody in their right mind, which I do, somebody might argue, but I love Patrick. He was in his right mind. I just believe. So people don't really understand. So he was in a massive footprint. We were in two of those that week too. And you do have to be careful. Like, because that sand is going to be probably 3 to 4 inches behind your ball. And like Webb, when he was in those footprints, you know, was practicing kind of that big wrist cock to get the club, you know, to set really, really steep going back. So he didn't hit the sand. And I think if you're not thinking in the moment and you're thinking about, well, this sucks here, my ball's in this thing, how am I going to get this thing out, that it could happen unintentionally. And here's the thing, anybody that says I'm wrong, that he did it intentionally, they don't know that. And for me saying that he didn't do it, I don't know that. There's only one person that knows whether or not he did it intentionally, and that's Patrick. But I believe if you really look at the facts, I don't think he did it intentionally. It just doesn't make sense with the cameras being in the last group. This isn't like he was on the third hole the first day and nobody's around. He accidentally got caught. He knew he was on camera. He was on camera on every single shot for the last 3 days. So I believe the penalty was just, like he said to me, in private, like he would have answered differently in the press conference after if he had the chance to do it again and not said, well, it's just the camera angle. I think he would have done that part a little bit different.
Yeah, it seems fair that with Patrick, you know, and I think you bring up a good point in how he's handled it afterwards, probably maybe rubbed more people the wrong way than the actual infraction itself, in that in some ways he almost played the victim card. And didn't own up to what exactly went down and show some, you know, not sympathy towards it, but just, I think, more self-awareness. Yeah. I think, you know, it's fair with Patrick if he was a little more in tune with the tone of the situation and be a little bit more self-aware, he would do himself more good. But in saying that, it almost appears that Patrick's comfortable with the way that he handles things. And like, when there is controversy like that, is it fair to say that do you feel like from the outside, does he like that? Does he like the controversy and feed off of that? Or is he really someone that, look, I can be more self-aware and make some of this stuff go away because I'd probably be a little more comfortable if it did?
Well, yeah, I think it depends what the controversy is. He doesn't like this controversy.
Okay.
Yeah, like he did great. I mean, he didn't complain. He didn't yell at, you know, any of the fans. He did the best. He tried to mock it. He tried to have fun with it because everybody had shovels out on the golf course. You know, there must have been 10,000 of these small shovels on the golf course. He was being called the excavator on every single hole. Like, I mean, there was 100 comments a hole. So, you know, he's hearing between 1,500 and 2,000 comments a hole during the whole round. When he did the shoveling thing, I thought that was a great sign, but yet again, social media ambushed him. He's just trying to make light of a really hard situation. I think where Patrick really thrives is, let's say he were to lose a golf tournament. Let's say he were to lose coming down the stretch, and he were to get that kind of controversy, that would push him to play better. Or if he got too excited, if he did the shush mark in the Ryder Cup, that would get him excited. But I don't think this controversy, there's anything like that he would wish that to be, because it was hard, and the things are being said are hard. And again, I think that if it didn't happen right after he got done shooting what he thought was only one under, he had a 3-shot lead. Now he was tied for the lead, or might have been one back, whatever that was. Now he's being told he's 3 back. I think just the timing of everything led to that poor probably answer. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, like you said, maybe trying to play the victim. I don't think he did that intentionally, only because I do know his heart. He is a friend. And at the same time, I think that if there'd have been somebody there to coach him a little bit better before he went out, like just say, hey, it'd probably be good here if you just say, hey, this looks bad, because it does. take responsibility for that, and then let's move on, and it'll die down. But obviously that's not what happened, and I think it's going to stay out there.
You know, it's interesting. Well, I think it, you know, unfortunately, I think it's going to probably follow him for the rest of the career, his career. And you know, you mentioned VJ in the past. He was kind of caught in a rule situation, and you know, that kind of followed him for a long time. And these are, you know, these are things that kind of stick with a player. But you know, it's interesting with Patrick, and I said this on my show, I called the Monday Scorecard, is that, you know, he's, I don't know what the word is, but you know, he's very different than, say, the carbon copy of what a professional golfer, perhaps the way they behave, right, inside the ropes, and even in the press conference. I mean, he's his own unique person. And although I don't always agree with, you know, the way that he, you know, kind of handles things and go about things, the one thing that I mentioned on the show is I said, Patrick Reed is good for golf. And he comes at it from a different angle. He's got intensity, and I think he's great for golf, and I think he's must-watch TV. I got to tell you, like, when Patrick's playing and there's something going on, like, I find myself, you know, wanting to tune in, even though I don't agree with everything he's doing, and that's okay, right? I mean, we're not all the same. I think we need characters. We need different types of peoples and personalities out on tour, and I got to tell you, like, I mean, I think Webb Simpson has to be the nicest person in the world, because in every team event, he seems to get this complicated person, Patrick Reed, you're playing with Webb, Bubba Watson, who, you know, hey, he's got, you know, Bubba's a different character as well, and comes at it from a different point of view. And I think that's okay. Like, I respect that, you know, and I think we need more people like Bubba, but Bubba plays with Webb. What is it about Webb, Ball, that,
you know, one of the coolest things was to watch Captain Woods go up to Webb after, you know, we were 0-3 and we didn't play Saturday afternoon, which we shouldn't have. And he just went up to Webb and said, Webb, I just want to tell you something. Thank you. You know, thank you for going out there in that hostile environment. Thank you for making Patrick feel comfortable. Patrick and Webb still wanted to play together even after going 0-2. You know, thank you for being a true team, mate. You were there, you know, when I was playing on the Ryder Cup teams. Like he's kind of that, him and Kuchar, they had as kind of floaters for the week, meaning that they could put him with anybody at any time. And you know, we really didn't know who we were playing with until Wednesday night, to be honest with you, until the pairings came out. So, it's one of those things that it's a compliment.
Yeah.
And I try to tell everybody exactly what you said. Webb is one of the kindest human beings on the planet. I've never met anybody like him. I'm fortunate enough to call him not only my friend, but also call him my boss.
Yeah.
And he's just one of those personalities that you can go. And, you know, I think that we'll see, too, the older Patrick gets, he'll mellow out. You know, if we go back and look in time, and I had to read stories, but Jack Nicklaus was not well-liked at all his first 5 or 6 years on tour. He was brash. He was arrogant.
That's a great point.
He was all these things, but he was really, really good at golf. And he said things you're not supposed to say, but he said them anyway. There's that famous, you know, playoff, I think, with Arnie at Oakmont, you know, which is Arnie grew up around there. And he was just really brash about the things he was saying. But the older Jack got, and as the kids entered the mix and got older, you saw a softer version with Tiger.
Yeah.
You know, Tiger used to be very, very guarded, not a good interviewer, not always great to play golf with. But as he got older, as his kids grew up, he got kinder and kinder. And now it's so unbelievable to see this different side of Tiger. And this young generation should feel so fortunate, because a lot of the older generation never got to see this side of Tiger. And he's become an unbelievable ambassador to the game, and still incredible at golf. He could still be the number one player in the world at the end of next year. Like, it wouldn't surprise anybody, to be honest with you. And I still think he has more majors than him and more wins. If his body holds up, I don't really know what the limit is.
There's no question. And I think with Patrick, he's 29 years of age. Clearly he's got incredible talent. He's a Masters winner. You know, he's, like I said, he's kind of a must watch TV, especially in team competition. I just feel as if he matures and just become a little bit more self-aware, it'll do him good. Take some pressure.
I agree.
Take some pressure off of him that he doesn't like when he's inside the ropes. And perhaps what he witnessed and what you witnessed for 2 days at the President's Cup might put that in motion a little bit quicker.
I love that. I agree completely.
Yeah. Well, hey, Paul, I can't thank you enough, man. I know you're right down the street from me, and we're doing a podcast, but you know, 8 President's Cups with 3 of those on the international side. That's just fabulous. And 3 Ryder Cups. Obviously you and Webb, I mean, you guys got it going right now. Webb coming off really a solid couple years now, rolling into 2020. I'm excited for golf. I'm excited for you. And I'm excited for your foundation as well, which I let the listeners know on the front end. So congratulations on all that work. Congratulations on President's Cup. And I look forward to seeing you at your big foundation charity event, Players Week, here in just a few months.
Travis, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure, buddy, to be on with somebody like you who not only loves golf the way I do, but you have changed a lot of people's lives and helped them get better at the game. And that's kind of my job as a caddy. Yeah. Yours is a little bit more difficult, a little bit more technical, requires a lot more understanding of biomechanics in the golf swing. But for me to be able to get back in my small part, I just love it. So thanks for having me on, and stay in touch.
All right, buddy. Thanks again.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Stripe Show podcast. I'm Travis Fulton. We'll see you next time.